Missed an episode of your favorite podcast? Choose from over a decade of content in our archives. Not just the latest episode. All free at GCNlive.com.
Welcome to America Tonight, and of course, so much conversation about Charlie Hebdo and the results of that, 17 people dying in all if we totaled everything that happened, but the important march in Paris and the fact that the United States, of all the world leaders that were there, the United States not there. Where was Obama? He was MIA. A lot of people talking about that today, and who better to chat with about such things then our pals from Talk Radio News, Justin Duckham in the wings. Hey, Justin, how are you?
Hey, doing pretty well. Great to be here.
So actually, there's a lot to talk about, but let's start with that and the reaction to the big march. I mean, everybody and anyone was there, including Benjamin Netanyahu, the Palestinian leader, was there. You had Angela Merkel was there, representing, of course, Germany, and no President Obama. And now, what I understand, somebody texted me today from the White House. They're saying, oh, well, they should have sent somebody more high profile. Is that right?
Exactly. The White House was held to a pretty hard position on this by reporters today, and ultimately Press Secretary Josh Earnest acknowledged that it'd be wrong to say that the White House did anything wrong by this, but did say that they probably should have sent somebody more high profile. He in fact said that had the circumstances been different, it would have been a very realistic possibility for them to have sent the president. However, he did say that due to security constraints, due to the sudden nature of this march, it was not possible to ensure the president's security. However, there were still quite a few people over here in D.C. who were puzzled that Secretary of State John Kerry or Vice President Joe Biden or even Attorney General Eric Holder, who was actually in Paris on that day, should have been the person to have attended instead of the French ambassador who ultimately won.
Yeah, no kidding. So they admit that, and the White House is taking the criticism for the absence. And as you said, Eric Holder right there could have jumped into the fray, didn't. What do you think happens now as far as supporting France? And, of course, the president, as soon as the attacks happen, like other world leaders said, they're our best ally, our strong ally, we'll do whatever we can. But really there's not much you can do other than hold summits or talk about what about this, global terrorist threat. Are there any of those planned?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. There is an anti-extremism summit that's going to be held in a number of weeks in response to this. That's probably one of the more visible signs that we're getting from the White House. And also in terms of the congressional reaction to this, we've had a lot of lawmakers pointing out that these sort of look like, loosely banded individuals who carried out this attack, and noted that this really highlights the sort of dangers that come with the possibility of a lone wolf terror attack, which has resulted in a lot of talk about, whether or not we should be continuing the current steps with the NSA, whether or not we should be, sort of expanding it, whether or not this justifies some of the intelligence gathering we've had in the past. And it's probably going to be a political football for quite some time, considering how, terror attacks like these that really sort of strike fear into the heart of the world, really change policy at the end of the day.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, let's jump to another thing, a pipe, and that would be the Keystone XL pipeline. The Senate advances it. It goes through one of those procedural hurdles, as you know. So that means by having that happen, it goes to the floor for open debate. Everybody gets a chance to jump into the fray. I think a lot of people are going to have something to say about this, don't you?
There certainly are. This is something, of course, that Republicans have made their top priority in the early days of 114th Congress. This is, continued to be sort of a controversial point when it comes to Democrats. We see the majority of them opposed to it, yet we nevertheless saw some crossing the aisle the last time this came to a Senate vote. One of the strategies that we're sort of hearing discussed right now is a move by a number of Democrats to try to use this open period to add on some pretty interesting amendments to this, which will theoretically be, tough for Republicans to vote on and could help Democrats in 2016. There's talk about including an amendment that would create an oil spill, cleanup fund. That's been put forward by Senator Ed Markey from Massachusetts. There's a discussion from Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont of including language that unilaterally states that the U.S. recognizes climate change as a scientific reality. And as well as a number, as well as some amendments that are aimed at trying to ensure that the oil that's you know, put forward to this can't be exported and will therefore fully benefit the U.S. So a lot of you know, big votes coming up tomorrow for this in terms of amendments. But you know, at the end of the day, it still looks like the White House is holding pretty firmly to their threat to veto this.
All right, so we'll see what happens in the battle of the veto. This is another thing that we could have really tied into the top, but as far as terrorism is concerned, hackers that said they were the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria on Monday just basically held hostage the Twitter and YouTube accounts for CENTCOM, wow, and said we can confirm that, you know, U.S. CENTCOM's Twitter and YouTube accounts were compromised. That's what I heard today from somebody I know down there. And the fact is that they said, you know, basically threatening soldiers, we're coming for you, watch your back. What was the reaction from the White House to this?
The White House, of course, noted that there was not really, you know, as troubling as this may be, this was not necessarily a huge security breach. They pointed out that this was just a Twitter account. Sensitive information was not compromised. And the Pentagon took a rather cavalier attitude about this, essentially saying that this was a sort of cyber prank and not, you know, backing up any assertions that ISIS itself could have actually been behind this, which, you know, leads to a lot of speculation over whether or not this could have just been, you know, sort of internet pranksters, which have been very, you know, prominent in recent years, or could have been, you know, some other kind of group trying to just cause havoc for the sake of havoc.
Yeah, there you go. All right. The other thing is, of course, we're all year long going to be talking about, you know this, Justin, about what's happening to the Democrats. We're thinking Hillary Clinton's the nominee, but she hasn't even declared yet officially. And the Republicans are making it kind of interesting. You have, for example, Romney, who is really trying to tell the people around him, listen, I'm serious. I'm going to make another run at this. This would be three times that he would try for that presidential ring. And then in the meantime, you've got others that are kind of backing out of this. So there's got to be conversation, I would assume, about, you know, who's in, who's out for the Republicans.
Yeah, just one way to look at this is this is essentially a reversal of what we saw in 2012. In 2012, we saw one establishment candidate, and then we saw sort of a dozen anti-establishment candidates trying to vie for the top position. This time around, what we're seeing three establishment candidates in the form of Jeb Bush, Mitt Romney, and Chris Christie to a large extent, essentially trying to jockey for the position, whereas a lot of these sort of rabble-rousers that we've come to know in recent years have sort of been backing away from this. One of the most recent ones, of course, has been Paul Ryan, who is sort of a conservative wonder kid and is still pretty respected by the Tea Party as their main you know, sort of intellectual driver, saying that he's not going to be running this time around. So essentially it's going to be a battle over who's going to win between those three in terms of who's going to be able to get the deep pocket Republicans, considering, you know, all three of them are pretty adept at fundraising. We have, you know, Mitt Romney, of course, who has a huge, you know, campaign chest, has done this before. We have Jeb Bush, who's, of course, favored by a lot of longstanding Republicans. And we have Chris Christie, who, frankly, has a lot of the Wall Street money sort of in his pocket in terms of, you know, him being sort of the backyard to Wall Street. We have him as somebody who has shown that he is a very good, you know, fundraiser when it comes to, you know, raising money for other candidates. You saw that as his, you know, tenure at the NGA or at the Republican Governors Association, where he was breaking records pretty solidly, despite the fact that he was under, you know, a scandal at the time. So it's really going to be a pretty heartfelt battle over who's going to, you know, sort of capture the support of the sort of the adults in the room of the Republican Party.
All right, Justin Duckham, we're going to square up the circle next on America Tonight. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment permanent basis, but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
On the average, Americans work between 45 to 50 years, hoping to build up enough wealth to retire and live out their golden years. Unfortunately, with taxation, the rising cost of food, energy, housing, and medical, many retirees are forced to live below the poverty line. Is this a flaw of free enterprise, or is our monetary unit, we call the Federal Reserve Note, forcing us into perpetual debt, ensuring inflation and higher taxes? These questions and more can be answered by reading G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Congressman Ron Paul states, "It's what every American needs to know about central bank power. A gripping adventure into the secret world of international banking cartel." Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I will give a silver dollar from the early 1900s to anyone who purchases this book. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order a copy today. It's critical that the public be made aware of the system. Call and order your copy today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
What good is a Big Berkey water filter?
We get that question a lot here at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. And in a word, the answer is protection. Protection from water main breaks, E. coli contamination, environmental chemical spills, pesticide runoff, chlorine taste and smell, and all forms of fluoride. Plus, Big Berkey water filters are the original gravity water filter system and most trusted on the market for a reason. Tested by multiple independent NSF EPA certified labs, they are the gold standard in water purification. At only 1.7 cents a gallon, a single set of filters can last for 5 to 10 years. That means big savings. Big Berkey, the one that's powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. Get a Big Berkey today at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit our website or call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey Water Filters, for the love of clean water.
Tonight. Odds and Ends, you just heard us there talking to Justin Zuckum, and one of the things that we talked about was that CENTCOM crash, the hack. You know, the hackers, I think it's a little more serious than this being played off like, oh, it's just a prank, whatever. Well, just a prank where you post the names and the addresses of generals. I mean, the Twitter and the YouTube accounts being hacked by people supposedly from Islamic State, whether it's a prank or not, here's what they did. And this happened for about 30 minutes. It was compromised for about 30 minutes, which is pretty long, I would say. And the FBI is looking into it, of course. But the Pentagon spokesperson that was trotted out to talk about it said it's just a little prank or vandalism. It's inconvenient. It's annoyance. But in no way is it something we're overly worried about sensitive or classified information being compromised. So then they release an official statement. This is the first reaction. They release an official statement saying that operational military networks were not compromised and there wasn't any operational impact. But this is what it said, supposedly. The Twitter feed after being hacked said, "In the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful, the cyber caliphate continues its cyber jihad." That's what it said. So the Twitter account published, as I mentioned, a list of generals and addresses associated with them. You know, Army General Officer Public Roster, period. And released it. I don't know that I would want all that out there. So it's a little more than, oh, just, it's no biggie, no big deal. So there's, you know, potential personal information out there. Are you kidding me? Josh Earnest at the White House said during the press briefing that the hacking was something that they take seriously. Because, of course, what's he going to say? Play off of the, it's not that big of a deal. But there's a pretty significant difference between what is a large data breach and the hacking of a Twitter account. Well, no kidding. But when the hacking was happening, the president announced, it's funny, as soon, when he was talking about this was happening, the president was announcing new proposals at bolstering cybersecurity after what happened against Sony Pictures, especially, so that we're coming up with new ways to stop this. Why? It's like we're always behind the eight ball. Doesn't it feel like that to you? So the chairman of the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Homeland Security, you know who he is, Michael McCaul, the congressman from Texas, said it's severely disturbing. And Michael McCaul, I'm going to agree with you. I think it's disturbing. I mean, they're like playing with us. Assault from cyber jihadists, it's something that we have to worry about. It's going to be very common unless there's a strategy to respond to the cyber attacks, including the whole North Korea thing. So having our CENTCOM's YouTube account, you know, featuring videos by the military of airstrikes on targets in Syria and Iraq. I mean, it was hacked to add two videos. It was hacked to add two videos called Flames of War, ISIS video, and Oh, Soldiers of Truth, Go Forth. So some of the slides posted on the Twitter account by the hackers were created by check this out, Lincoln Library, which we trace it, right? And it's a federally funded research center at MIT. And they, of course, what are they doing? They're studying national security problems. So Lincoln Lab isn't responding about the information of the slides, any of that kind of stuff. And some of that dealt with intelligence recon that has might be needed in a conflict scenario against China. So, I don't know, looking at the documents and saying it's no big deal, I'm going to say, coming out of MacDill in Florida, that's where CENTCOM is, and that's where they handle the military ops with the Middle East and Central Asia, I'm going to say it's a big deal. It's not a joke, you know? I mean, because, first of all, releasing the addresses and stuff, I would say, I wouldn't be too comfortable if I were somebody in the military and my address was floating around up there after being saying that it was, you know, this wasn't an ISIS attack. I mean, give me a break. All right, well, let's segue into something else. So we go from that to how much are you paying at the pumps? I couldn't wait to jump on the air to tell you. In my neighborhood, at a Shell station, $1.72 for regular, for a gallon of regular. No joke. And it's been in that neighborhood of $1.75, $1.76, that kind of stuff. So oil is diving. It fell another 5%. You've got Venezuela and Iran really pressuring OPEC to stop it. Really, really pressuring them to do something about you know, to cut production, to do something about it, and they're not doing anything about it. You've got, if you look at crude, I always say look at a barrel of crude and you know what you're going to pay at the pumps, you can figure it out. But if it's around $46, it fell. And that's what we saw. I mean, prices were pretty stable last week, but now we're seeing them go even further. And you got to think about this. Brent, 42 a barrel from 80. I mean, cutting the outlook for U.S. futures, the contract, from 241 from 70. So this route has wiped out 60% of prices since June, and it doesn't look like it's letting up. I mean, traders are really kind of giving up the idea of predicting a bottom, even with these signs that shale drillers are hitting the brakes, because you know what? That's what's happening. The number of rigs drilling for oil in North Dakota fell by 8, the lowest since 2010. So from the technical side of this, I guess they're not trying to pick any kind of a bottom. So four U.S. refineries with a capacity combined of more than 1 million barrels a day, to give you a perspective, recovering from disruptions at the weekend caused by the cold and other fires and that kind of stuff. They were restarting on Monday. They got a fourth one in Lima, Ohio, not too far from where I went to school, in Athens, Ohio. That's expected to be offline for a week because they've had some problems there. But you have the influences of what's going on around the world, and it's wild to see this. Good for the people at the pump, not good for the investors, not good for Venezuela, Iran, and for so many others watching it cut. And, you know, it's also funny, too, while all of this is happening, and the ebb and flows by the Bakken boom that they've had is feeling the ebbs and flows. I mentioned that with the rigs down in North Dakota. So check this out. Mexico's state oil company, Pemex, said on Thursday, you see it whenever you go there, you see it all over the place, that they're proposing an oil swap with the United States. How about that? That would be the first sustained crude imports by Mexico after all this time of being self-sufficient. And basically, Pemex said that they had set out a plan to import 100,000 barrels a day of light crude, and they want to mix it with their own heavier crude at some domestic refineries. So under the proposal, so you get what I'm talking about, Mexico would in exchange provide us with heavier Mexican crude for processing at our refineries, and they'd use the imports from the United States to boost local gasoline and diesel output. Pretty much they know that this would be incredibly helpful to them. You know, in the 90s, Mexico and the United States had an exchange of crude from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserves. And they want to do this swap. They want to do it. Because after the energy reform they had there, it ended Pemex's 75-year monopoly, basically, that they had on production and exploration of oil and gas. And that's, of course, a Mexico state-run company. And now they've got all these competitors on their heels. So it makes sense that they would want to do that. And they're in talks. The Commerce Secretary is saying that they're they're in talks. Penny Pritzker, who's the U.S. Commerce Secretary, is admitting this, saying that whether we're going to export the light crude oil to our neighbors or what, and we're dealing with that right now. And this glut, this oil glut, is spurring, like I said in the beginning of this, top traders to also look at supertankers for storage at sea. Wow. Isn't it interesting, the rippling effects of you pulling up to the pump and me and all of you in those nooks and crannies and thinking, woohoo, I'm paying 170 whatever. And what it's doing to the House of Saudi. What's happening to those oil kings? What's going on in North Dakota? That's bad for some people. And then possibly this whole exchange with Mexico, I find fascinating, without a doubt. All right, stay with us. I'm going to hop over the fence. Hop with me, and I'll meet you there.
Yeah?
Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Right, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson. And it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
I hope not. Now, get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail at sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
The nation's largest independently owned and operated talk radio network, the Genesis Communications Network, GCN. The Genesis Communications Network is one of America's premier broadcasters of captivating talk radio. We thank you for listening. Now, just imagine, there are thousands of people who are just as passionate about radio as you are. But what you may not realize is how easy and affordable it is to advertise with us. Radio commercials for your business could be heard on hundreds of radio stations across the U.S. every day. We can help you by creating an effective radio advertising campaign for your company. From script writing to producing your commercial, just like the one you're listening to right now. No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
On Facebook, on the news, and in conversations with friends, we're bombarded every day with advice on how to be healthier, from gluten-free and non-GMO diets to how much exercise and sleep the body needs. But how much have you heard about alkalizing the body? AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops are a holistic and natural way to get your body's pH levels back in balance. Just a few drops in water will help your body rid itself of harmful waste. And even the healthiest of diets can be complemented with your daily use of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops. Who isn't looking for more vibrance, vigor, and energy? Now buy two bottles of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops and get $10 off your order. Visit AlkaVision.com or call 800-518-7615. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops are packed with a powerful combination of the most alkaline minerals and compounds. Open the door to greater health, vitality, and zest for life. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health. Call 800-518-7615 or head to AlkaVision.com.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for $35,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet for $35,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait. So call 866-91-STEEL. Lock in your price now. Call 866-91-STEEL. That's 866-917-8335.
Talking about the Keystone Pipeline. Now the Senate is going to get a chance to kick it around. And you know everybody wants a piece of this for sure. Who better to have on the show than IER's Dan Kish to talk with us about where this is headed and whether or not this whole veto thing can be shoved aside or overcome, I guess, is the best way to put it now that it's pushed through the Senate Natural Resources Committee, and it's going to pass the House, certainly. We saw that happen already. So now it's all about overriding the presidential veto that's been thrown about for a while now, and I can't wait for this debate on this because I think it's going to be mostly positive. Dan, what a long introduction, but you know, you've been talking about this for a while now. What do you think we're going to see happen in this debate process?
Yeah, Kate, actually, I've been talking about this a lot longer than I wanted to. I don't know about you.
Yep.
I think people are tired of hearing about it, but that's what happens when you have a president who won't make a decision about whether it's in the national interest. So that's where we find ourselves. Well, it looks as though the Senate has sufficient votes to pass this. Actually, the bill they introduced had 60 co-sponsors, more than the more than necessary to overcome a filibuster. And now the question is, can they get enough votes to override a promised presidential veto? The amazing thing about this is he finally came out and said he's going to veto it after telling us that that he couldn't make up his mind and he was waiting for Nebraska, which resolved its issues last Friday with the Supreme Court decision there and all the rest. So it's kind of laid bare. The president has a significant decision to make here. It's too bad we've had to wait all this time in suspense, but we're going to see some more suspense before it's all over.
Boy, no kidding. We're going to see some real suspense. All right, so I don't get it. I don't get it from the perspective of already it cleared environmental hurdles and then had to be put through the wash again, I'll call it that. And you had a lot of people that already signed off. Look, there's even bipartisan support for this. Is this strictly, as you were talking about the president, him being held hostage by his agenda when he got elected the first time around with a little bit of a push from some environmental votes?
Yeah, well, I think it's actually him becoming captive or wanting to become captive, or maybe it's, you know, that syndrome they get when they're, imprisoned by folks, but Stockholm syndrome, but, he seems more than willing to, adopt this. I think it really reflects his view. I mean, he's a true believer that, we should not be using more sources of energy other than the ones that he likes, which are wind and solar, I guess. And therefore, it's time to draw a line in the sand and say no more of this. The problem with it is that the world runs on these fuels. And what the United States does is pretty immaterial, except to the lives and futures of Americans. And to somehow stick your head in the sand and say we're not going to use oil anymore is probably a big surprise to most Americans. But that's what he's saying here. If he says that we can't do this, the country that has drilled more wells than the rest of the world combined, the country that rose to the number one economic position in the world by using its energy resources and pioneering it. If we can't do it, other people are going to do it, which means that we're going to end up suffering the consequences of those sorts of actions.
Yeah, no, it's interesting too. I was talking to someone from Canada the other day who was in the business, and I asked about, really honestly, what's the reaction in Canada? Not government reaction, but the people's reaction of people in the business. And he said they can't believe it because of all the pipelines we already have running through this country, especially in Texas, that no biggie. It's about how, you know, it's about securing it. It's about having everything in line, which he said we perceive that the Americans do. And they're just mind-boggled by all of it.
Yeah, I know a lot of Canadians myself, and they don't really understand what's going on in the United States. They can't understand it. They've got people banging down their doors to try to get their oil supplies, and their nearest neighbor and best ally and friend, with whom they've stood shoulder to shoulder during numerous wars, is all of a sudden saying, I mean, the president, a couple of weeks ago, he was talking about how this is just Canadian oil and it won't benefit the United States and this, that, and the other thing. It's as though he's dissing our neighbor of the North, and they have, you know, I don't know if your discussions with this person detailed this, but their supplies of energy are second or third largest in the world, Kate.
Yeah, yeah.
They truly, I mean, the oil that they're producing now is nothing compared to what they could produce and will produce in the future. So they're going to be in the oil business a long, long time. They have extraordinarily large supplies, larger actually than probably the Saudis. second only to the Venezuelans, who actually have huge amounts of similar oil. That's where they get their oil down there.
Yeah, crazy. And tell everyone, too, because I always emphasize this. I mean, there really is jobs attached to this, over 40,000 jobs, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and these are jobs. I was reading a story in the Wall Street Journal last week about a 25-year-old welder in Texas who makes $140,000 a year. He works a lot of hours, but that's what he makes. And that's what we're talking about in terms of the kind of jobs that this would open up for people, welders and heavy equipment operators and technicians who deal with things. Whenever you're building something, it especially something as large and as technically challenging as this, it means you're applying all those fields of real skilled work, and these are high-paying jobs. And then, of course, all those people require services and goods, and they buy pickup trucks, and there's need for the equipment that they use, you know, heavy equipment, that sort of thing. The jobs spread out from the numbers that they get there, and the president has downplayed the jobs, too, so those jobs. And like any construction job, Kate, these jobs do go away, just like a house construction job. But we don't poo-poo house construction jobs. In fact, we cheer when the number of houses being built goes up. For some reason, the president doesn't cheer when those same jobs or jobs that pay more could be created by the Keystone Pipeline.
Yeah, like I said, I just don't get it. And, you know, here's the thing. The veto, let's say the veto happens. I mean, then we're looking at a re-rack again. And if the pipeline, for the pipeline to come back up, it would be whoever the next president is, and we don't know who that's going to be, because right now certainly you have the majority Republicans in the Senate and in the House too, and obviously, like I said, there's some bipartisan support, so this really is the best chance for it to get through quickly, right?
Yes, yes, exactly.
Otherwise, we're looking at down the road for even the possibility, as long as Canada hangs on to that offer, which I don't, you know, there's a lot of talk about the rescinding of that and that China was going to jump on board. But from what I hear, that's not necessarily what's going to happen, but it just delays everything for, maybe 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, who knows what will ultimately happen.
Yeah.
I can tell you this. The Canadians are looking for – we are currently their number one market for their energy products. I mean, they're almost – we take almost 90 – I'm going to say 95%. It's somewhere in that range. It's not just oil. It's also natural gas. It's also electricity. They produce a lot of the hydro that goes into the northeastern states and other parts of the country. And we trade a lot of energy back and forth. They are a huge trading, they're a number one trading partner. Why we've decided to stick our fingers, or why the president has decided, the American public have it, that 72% of Americans support this. And I hope, you know, and I've told my Canadian friends that, listen, this doesn't represent the vast majority of Americans. They're scratching their heads trying to figure out what it is. But I will say this, Kate, it is important for this reason. If we can't build a pipeline that has 72% of the American public behind it, that comes from an ally across our own border, in a country where we already have 2.5 million miles of energy pipelines, literally 2.5 million miles. Then you got to start asking yourself, well, what's this mean for the future about building anything? And what's it mean about expanding energy supplies of any kind? I mean, what makes us believe that he's going to allow any kind of robust offshore oil drilling or onshore drilling or anything that he has any say about going forward if he's decided that a project that his own State Department says meets all of these criteria, and they've said it numerous times through the various studies they've looked at. Is he basically putting up a stop sign and saying no more in the United States? If that's the case, and I can draw no other conclusion by his actions, then we're looking at a different world than most Americans think we ought to be looking at, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. Great analogy there. What does that mean for futuristic things in a lot of different directions when it comes to energy? Without a doubt, if we can't get it done with the Canadians. Dan Kish, as always, thanks so much.
Keith, my pleasure.
Thanks. Have a good night.
Alex Jones here. For the last 2 years, I've been working with top doctors, nutritionists, and chemists to design a nutraceutical formulation that has truly life-changing health benefits. So many other formulations out there contain toxic ingredients, synthetic additives, and even GMOs. Introducing the all-new Ancient Defense Herbal Immunity Blend, crafted with over 14 key ancient herbs and extracts to supercharge and prepare your body for what experts admit is the most dangerous season of the year. We have rejected hundreds of other formulations in our quest to bring you what is simply the most powerful and comprehensive proprietary formula that we have ever created in the realm of herbal immunity. Experience the benefits of combining over 14 ancient herbs and extracts with exciting new advances in nutraceutical science. Now is the time to secure Ancient Defense for you and your family. Visit InfoWarsLife.com or call 1-888-253-3139. That's InfoWarsLife.com.
We live in a complicated society. Stressful issues are always popping up. Have you ever been treated unfairly by someone? Have you ever been overcharged for a repair? Have you ever signed a contract or a document, worried about identity theft? How many times have you been in those unique situations where you just wanted to call an attorney to find out if you're right or wrong, or what your legal rights are? But every time you think about calling an attorney, what do you think about first? That's right. Who do you call, and how much will it cost? Our friends at LegalShield have found a solution. With a nationwide network of 6,900 attorneys who average 19 years of experience, LegalShield's law firms take over 40,000 calls per week helping their members. For less than $20 per month, you can have access to LegalShield on everything from the trivial to the traumatic. Let LegalShield stand up for your rights at lsprotection.com. That's lsprotection.com. Or call 855-340-SAVE, 855-340-7283.
Results will vary from case to case.
Virtually anyone can hack your cell phone and track your calls, your texts, your emails, your every movement, but only if they can detect a signal. Stay one step ahead of hackers and Big Brother with a Blockit Pocket, a custom-made pocket infused with pure silver that creates a complete Faraday enclosure for your cell phone. For free shipping to the Lower 48, visit BlockitPocket.com or call 888-315-9618. BlockitPocket.com. Enhancing health and privacy.
I lost 18 pounds in just 4 days. Hi, I'm James Zetta. If you're like me, you've already tried and failed at many diet and weight loss plans. The 18 and 4 weight loss plan requires no exercising, no diet pills or additives, no laxatives, no meal replacements, and no diet drinks. The 18 and 4 program is crystal clear with a day-to-day, step-by-step, and meal-to-meal guide. If you're not satisfied with your results, I will give you my 30-day full money-back guarantee. Go to 18and4.com. That's the number 18, I-N, the number 4.com.
Once again, you astound me, I guess is the best way to say it, with the amount of email that flies into America Tonight. I want to mention this. If you don't know the web address, easy, 24/7, just like late night fast food windows without the calories, we'll take your emails on whatever it is you want to talk about. And since I've been doing America Tonight, I can't remember a day I came in when there was no emails. So, of course, we have tons of emails. AmericaTonight.net. And without further ado, let's jump to those emails.
You have mail, mistress.
This one from Paula first, who says, Kate, long-time listener, first-time emailer. Get it? Ha-ha, I get it. Very clever. I have a question for you. My question is, do you really think that Hillary Clinton has a chance to be elected president, because I've heard you say it, that there is no one more polarizing than Hillary Clinton. Don't you think that even hurts her with Democrats? Is it just such a foregone conclusion that she gets the Democratic nomination and she's going to be tough to beat for whoever the Republican is? Well, I mean, obviously, I think, yeah, it is a foregone conclusion. This is like a give back to Hillary. And does it mean she could lose the primary and not win? I mean, primaries. Could she lose? Of course, anything's possible. I wish I had that crystal ball that could tell me everything that was going to happen every single day. But my feeling is that she is going to, my feeling is she is going to get it, unless she doesn't want it. Unless something changes in her life, I just don't see it. I don't see that she's not going to do it. So she runs, and can she be beaten? Well, of course. But the question is, I think that the Republicans have to get their act together as to who's running and who is the best person to run and who's on the undercard. I mean, everybody keeps talking about, well, then there has to be a woman on the undercard. There has to be a good candidate. Can we start talking about good candidates? Forget about the whole gender and everything else. But realistically, who is that person? There have been a ton of people who have expressed interest. It's the same cast of characters. But this time, Jeb Bush really pushing, I think, a lot harder behind the scenes. And then also Mitt Romney throwing his name in again, that he wants to try for a third time. What? I don't see that happening. I don't see Mitt Romney being the person there. So I would say the best thing that the Republicans have done is the fact that they're going with a sooner convention, and they're coming out of it in June with somebody sooner than waiting for a couple more months in the summer. And we've talked about this a lot, and that's good. They don't know where they're having their convention yet, but at least they know, or no, they do know where they're having the convention, but they don't know who that candidate is going to be, right? They don't know who the undercard is going to be. And the key is really finding the right appealing conservative person. It's really finding that person, not somebody trying to split the difference, because I think that's a big mistake, trying to do that. Here's one from Jake in Austin. Kate, you know me, I'm always emailing the show. What'd you think of the White House admitting that they should have had a bigger official in place since every other world leader was there? Oh, yeah, once again, they screwed up. Because there you have Angela Merkel, you have, of course, Hollande and everybody, the outpouring of grief. You have Benjamin Netanyahu. You have so many people that are there in Paris with this impressive, massive march, the biggest that we've seen since 1944. We said adios to the Nazis. And you see the pictures, and they're just stunning, the amount of the crowds there. Yeah. What do they think? It was just going to be a little tiny march, a little rally, 1,000 people or so. It was pretty darn impressive. And it shows you people are furious. So the White House had to acknowledge that they made a mistake not sending somebody bigger to this massive rally in Paris against Islamic terrorism. And, you know, now they're going to have this... They're going to have these terror meetings, these anti-extremists. They're going to have an anti-extremist summit. But the rally on Sunday was a historic show of unity when you have that many people. And nobody higher representing the U.S. than the ambassador to France. Attorney General Eric Holder was there in Paris for meetings over the weekend. He could have done that. Instead, the ambassador, Jane Hartley, is there. You know, the White House didn't say why Holder didn't go to the march or didn't say much about that. In fact, the Secretary of State, John Kerry, pretty much dismissed the criticism as what he called quibbling and announced a trip to the French capital later in the week. Oh, well, that's good. Whoops, we shoulda, woulda, coulda. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody's saying, je suis Charlie. But here's the one thing that you think they would get right, and they didn't get right. It is unsettling. You know, on the Sunday swirl on Fox News, that's what I call the talking political heads. On Fox News on Sunday, Senator Lindsey Graham questioned the logic of even sending Holder you know, to Paris for counterterrorism meetings, saying that, suggesting the president's not confronting the matter as Islamic terrorism. You know, that's the cry here. And he said, last time I checked, this is a quote from Graham, he said, last time I checked, we're at war. I wouldn't send my attorney general, if I were president, to deal with Islamic terror, radical terrorists. We're at war here. And it's a crime. It's out of control. On CBS, Rubio, Senator Rubio, said he could understand how security might have played a role in the decision, because then the Secret Service was worried, how can they defend the president? And that's why I didn't attend. But it would have been better to do it differently. You have all those other world leaders, for goodness sake. Nobody wants anything to happen to them either, and they must have had a ton of security around them. Just was a bum strategy, I would say. Because think of the heavy security for David Cameron, the British Prime Minister, of course the President of France, the Chancellor from Germany, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, the Palestinian President Abbas. Naturally, it was like a wall of security. So the bottom line is they probably should have flushed that out a little bit more, or maybe it is that. Maybe there's something to that with Obama. Okay, I'm going down a rabbit trail. Darn it, you know, this, he'd get me excited, and then I get to go to some other emails. Let's go to some other emails here. All right, this one is from Bill, listening to us in Illinois. Hello, Bill. And Bill says, Kate, finally that deal happened for those Cuban prisoners. At first it looked like we couldn't even find the prisoners, didn't know what was going on with those prisoners. But first word I heard today is that they were released. So that's pretty big that they're all released. You've talked about Cuba before, having known more about it from family members. Yeah, releasing them is a big hurdle because they've got these talks at this normalizing ties thing after all these decades. So the list of 53 was part of that big breakthrough. And, of course, the United States is going to say it's a great milestone, but they're going to keep, I think, pressuring Havana to free some more people that they're calling political prisoners, meaning people that speak out against the way they're being treated or their fellow brothers and sisters are in Cuba. You know, suddenly there's an X on their house and they're thrown in prison. And, you know, there was questions as to whether Havana would release all the people they pledged to free as part of that deal that Obama and Castro, Raul Castro, announced back in December to get back to diplomatic ties, because they've been severed for 50 years, if you think about that, 50 years. And they say as many as 8 people on the list had been released. Initially they were saying that, but then there was a schedule for others to get out. So the bottom line is they all got out. I mean, that's it. They're out. They were political prisoners, and it looked like they were kind of messing around with that. But finally, thank you for bringing that up, they did release them. What happens, you know, with the embargo? That's going to be a congressional thing. I don't think you're going to see that. But January 21st and 22nd, talks in Havana. You've got the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State, Roberta Jacobson, starts the negotiating process. And then you see what happens. There's going to be a call to lift the embargo in Cuba, but I wouldn't count on legislation that will roll through anytime soon, fast. There's a lot of opposition to that. One of them would be Marco Rubio has massive opposition to that. And there are others. Bob Menendez from New Jersey, who's a Democrat, same thing. He does not want to see that happen there. They both have Cuban ties. But even beyond that, there are plenty in the GOP side of the aisle that will never square that up. They just won't. So don't look for that to happen. We'll see diplomatic relations perhaps changing, but other than that, we're not going to see the big embargo lifted. Let's put it that way. All right, thanks to all of you who emailed the show. Remember, lickety split, you can do it 24/7, americatonight.net. Stay with us.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number, 1-855-905-MYTV. The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. Say goodbye to the cable guy and get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money. Call 1-855-905-MYTV. Sign up for packages starting as low as $19.99, and there's no equipment to buy. You get free HD TV upgrade, a free DVR upgrade, and free professional and installation. You control what you watch when you watch it. Record your favorite shows. Pause and rewind live TV. Even skip the commercials. Watch local channels, too. At just $19.99, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card. Call 1-855-905-MYTV. 1-855-905-MYTV. Say goodbye to the cable guy. Cut costs and get more. 1-855-905-MYTV. 1-855-905-MYTV. TV.